Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, someone I've been following on Twitter for a while, back when I had Twitter and I was on Twitter, Kurt Schlichter, a very entertaining guest, trying to get into the psychology of Republicans and are we headed for a national divorce? Also, Jack Posobiec gives us the latest out of Uvalde. The more we learn, the more angry you should be. Email me, freedom@charliekirk.com, and support the Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support. I can't wait to see all of you in Tampa, Florida, tpusa.com/SAS. That is tpusa.com/SAS to get engaged and get involved with Turning Point USA's Student Action Summit, tpusa.com/SAS. Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump will be there with Turning Point Action. Opening session is going to be amazing. July 22, 23, 24. We have the greatest speakers in the movement, Greg Gutfeld, Josh Hawley, Kaylee McEnany, and more, tpusa.com/SAS. I love hearing from you, freedom@charliekirk.com, and support the Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. With us right now is Kurt Schlichter. He is a phenomenal columnist for Town Hall and also author of We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America. I want to ask him about that. But first, Kurt, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show. Maybe you can explain to our audience, why are Republicans so willing to betray their voters? Help me out here.
Well, it's because they're Republicans, and that's kind of what Republicans do. Look, after that fiasco we saw yesterday, the only thing I found good about it is there were only 14 of them. About 10 years ago, before Donald Trump, before the Tea Party really established itself, there would have been 30 of these preening nitwits. I mean, holy cow. You know, Charlie, you look at these guys, and you just imagine their conversation. Hey, guys, we're about to win the Senate. There's a red wave coming. What can we do to screw it up? Let's get his whole team in here. Let's figure this out. Let's convene a council of renowned nitwits, of political amateurs, to figure out how we can botch the unbotchable. How do you screw up in an environment with $7 gas and a president who's the only man in human history who forgot how to ride a bike? And yet they've managed to do it. Bravo. Bravo.
What's amazing to me, Kurt, though, and maybe you can help me understand this, is that Cornyn goes and gets rebuked to his face. I mean, that's not fun for any human to go through. And then within hours turns around and defies his voters. Is there a deeper explanation to this?
This is Cornyn's time in the sun, right? He's the guy, he wants to take over for McConnell, who is also screwing up. I actually defend McConnell often as a good tactical leader, but he has totally botched this one, Charlie. I mean, this is amateur hour. But he lets Cornyn run with this. Cornyn's like, wow, I'm in the limelight. And of course it goes to his head. And he comes out with this, and then like he needs a cherry on top, he's heard saying, okay, next, immigration. I mean, literally, how do you plan to screw up worse? You, like I said, you would have to have a planning session to screw, you know, brainstorming. Okay, how can we mess this up even worse? Yeah, that's bad, but you can do worse. It's staggering. Unbelievable.
But what is their internal calculus? I mean, I don't think they want to. Maybe they do. Maybe they actually had that planning meeting. But I mean, they think that they're going to win over moderate voters by doing this, or they can appease the Democrats? What is their internal calculus here?
Well, first of all, I think it's really personally driven. I think Cornyn really likes this. He wants to show himself as somebody who can take over from McConnell someday when McConnell finally, you know, withdraws within his shell forever. And but he thinks there's polling out there that supports it. Of course, the polling is, would you support something that would stop people from hurting kids? And it's like 95% of people are like, yeah, I would. And he's like, well, everybody seems to support it because, you know, of course. And look, these guys didn't get here there because they're geniuses, okay? You know, Washington, D.C. is full of lawyers. Cornyn's a lawyer. Cornyn's a judge, in fact, or was. But, you know, if they were, like, any good at it, they'd actually be making money out in the real world. It's a place where mediocrities get a lot of attention, and that's what we're seeing with Cornyn. He thinks that this is his limelight. No one's ever talked about John Cornyn this much. John Cornyn's wife hasn't talked about John Cornyn this much. This is heaven for John Cornyn. This is his time. And he doesn't care if he has to screw over the voters because, well, you know, they're voters and, you know, they probably sweat when they work.
Well, that's awfully cynical, and I totally agree. And so, I mean, there's 14 of them that voted for this. And then he says, I want you to expand on this a little bit more. I actually didn't get a chance to really tell our audience about this. And then he smugly says, and next, immigration. Can you walk our audience through that?
I can't, unless you have some sort of political death wish. Do they want to remain in the minority?
Maybe they do.
I mean, really, you have to ask that. And again, I'm a guy who will usually argue with people that McConnell is a parliamentary genius. He's very good at that. He deserves a lot of credit for saving us from Merrick Garland, who's really proved what he is over the last.
I agree with that. I think that's fair. I totally agree.
And this, I thought, I don't, where did this come from? Now, I think he thinks, you know, Cornyn's doing it for himself. I think McConnell's convinced by some polling. I don't know what the others are thinking. I mean, Joni Ernst, like me, Joni Ernst was a battalion commander. You know, I would expect better from you, Joni, but it's not happening. Here's the most cynical thing, and this is beautiful, Charlie. You'll love this. Sherry Moore Capito of West Virginia, she votes for this abomination. And she sends a message to her people saying, well, you know, we got a lot of mental health stuff, and people are talking about red flags, but those are for the states, and we'll never have a red flag law here in West Virginia. It's like, oh, great. that's perfect. It's a terrible law, but we're not going to do it here, so it's okay. I'm staggered.
Yeah, that's for the other states.
Yeah, that's for the other states. The Constitution doesn't matter. You know, I kind of take it seriously. I deployed 2 times in defense of our Constitution. This stuff's personal to me. And, you know, as a lawyer, when I look at the red flag laws, I mean, I've seen the movie Minority Report. Hell, I'm in Los Angeles. One of my friends was in it. This whole pre-crime thing where you haven't done anything wrong.
Yep, that's right.
And you lose your rights. But you can get them back by spending $10,000 on a guy like me to go in and lawyer for you. Lucky you. What's the other constitutional right that's up to approval from a judge? You know, if you're a criminal, we have a process for that, and it's constitutional. It's called prosecution, and then you can get punished if you've committed a crime. Or if you're crazy, we have constitutional provisions too. You know, we can 5150 them like that great old Van Halen album. And that's constitutionally okay too. But what's not constitutionally okay, Charlie, is going out there and essentially saying, well, you know, you tweeted something, you said something controversial. You know, I got the new book, We'll Be Back, The Rise and Fall of America. I talk in detail about what a civil war would look like. I leverage my military experience. I want people to get some ground truth so they don't talk about it, you know, frivolously, because it's something very horrible. But how long before somebody red flags me because I'm talking about civil wars? And how long until some liberal judge goes, oh, okay, well, I don't want to risk it. I'll just take Kurt's rights away. And then Kurt can go and get them back. Maybe. This is America. This is not how we do this.
I mean, I will definitely get red flagged by not even.
Oh, okay. We're so red flagged.
Yes, all of us are.
It's red flags for everybody.
Yep, red. And so then you read the actual language of the law of other states red flags. It's, do you think you're a danger to yourself or others? I get emails every single day from people that threaten my life. Of course, they never get arrested, but they say, you're a danger to democracy.
Well, you know, if guns are so bad, perhaps you'd want to arrest, I don't know, a meth addict with weird stuff on his laptop who's walking around with a gun and filled out a gun form wrong. Yeah, shouldn't he be arrested? Oh, wait, he's not, because he's connected. That's... Oh, wait, maybe you'd want to prosecute gun crimes in Chicago and Los Angeles.
Nope.
Oh, no, we can't do that. But we can have something where we can take our political enemies' rights away. That sounds great to me.
That's what they're going to do. Kurt Schlichter will be back. Tell us about the book, Kurt.
You know, the book is I wrote the book because there are a lot of trends in our society that are getting people down, getting people scared, and they should be. Look, I'm optimistic. I think we're going to come through it on the other end. But the new book explores a lot of the worst case scenarios. And I get to leverage a lot of my military experience and, you know, my legal stuff and, you know, my pop cultural stuff. I talk about, you know, whether maybe we're going to just die out as liberal wine women decide to stop having children and just live with their cats. And eventually our cities are deserted like in Japan. Or maybe we'll have a national divorce. And I talk about what that is. Now, I don't do family law. I do other kinds of law. But, you know, an American divorce would be like take Johnny Depp, Amber Heard times a million. It would be very, very ugly. I talk about the practicalities of it. And then I talk about civil war, and I talk about a blue federal government and a red federal government and the many forms it could take. Now, I'm, I'm a war college graduate. I went to the Party War College, the Chico State of War Colleges. The Army War College, but I know a little about this stuff. And, you know, I talk about everything from low grade insurgencies to actual, you know, mechanized forces moving on the battlefield, something like you might see out in Ukraine and what that would look like. And I talk about the impact on real people. I'm a former stand up comic, so this is not a Bataan death march of unfunny bow tie conservative garbage. There's nothing I hate more than those crucifix conservatives who make conservatism boring. I try not to do that. There's some funny stuff in there. I try and make every line either amusing, interesting, or thought provoking. And I think it's a good book. It ends up with a president looking back, because I put little vignettes in there. I think fiction's a great tool for teaching. I put a little, the last chapter is a president looking back in 2033 on how we got where we're going and how we came back, because I think we will come back. I think America is strong. I think we've got good bones. I think we've got the key and the answer in our Constitution, and all we got to do is put them into effect. But it's going to be a big fight.
That was going to be my question, is where do you think we actually are going? Because I know there's all these different scenarios, but if this continues, when you do not have an opposition party in Washington, D.C., do you think a national divorce is something in the cards? Is that something that you think we're getting closer towards? I mean, for example, Arizona is being invaded. We had 1,900 people come in the Yuma sector last night. 1,900. The federal government doesn't care. In fact, they want them here. Let's just say Arizona just says, you know, we're going to secure our own border. We're going to do our own thing. You know, federal government, you're no longer sovereign. We're sovereign over you.
Look, I think we're going to see more and more of that because these behaviors on the part of the federal government are driving people to extremes. And people and the Overton window, you know, when leftists open the Overton window, it's open for us too. And one of the things I write about is something I worry about, because I don't think that just because you're conservative, you have somehow repealed human nature. I write about the authoritarian temptation. There is a temptation to have a strong man come in and make all the problems disappear. But when all the problems have disappeared, you have a whole new set, like a constitution that's not in effect. So I think we have to be very careful about what we do. I'm famously aggressive. I like confrontation, but we've got to understand that, you know, we've got to keep our society, our constitutional-based system as a whole. It's like a Jenga tower. We keep pulling pieces out of it, and then, everybody try and look surprised when it collapses.
The question is, how far down are we? Has it already
Good
collapsed?
Question.
This is the question, right? And that's actually the disagreement, and we don't have time to dive into this right now. I do want to make sure I reiterate the title for our audience, though, The Fall and Rise of America by Kurt Schlichter, which is, we have a lot of people on this program, and what concerns me is that smart people like you, you're not even able to agree on the diagnosis of where we are. And that's really, and so 20 seconds, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's good that we don't all agree on everything. I think, look, when I was a battalion commander, I would gather, 10 people in and say, what do you guys all think? We have in the conservative movement, we have a lot of great thinkers, and we have to not fall into this trap of being afraid of disagreement like leftists are. We don't need to conform. I want to hear what everybody has to say, and that's the way we're going to come to the best decision. I'm optimistic, Charlie. I think our country is strong.
Yep.
I think our ideology is right, and I think we're going to win.
My hope is in the people that have not fought for 40 years to wake up and fight, and I think we're going to see a realignment like we've never seen before.
Yes,
Kurt Schlichter, love it. Come back anytime. Great book, The Fall and Rise of America. Look, free speech, religious liberty, and the Second Amendment. Our rights are being destroyed across the board. And look, many months ago, I told our team, I am sick of paying all this money to these cell phone providers that hate me and hate our values. So I said, go find that really cheerful guy. I think his name was Glenn at one of our events, and he kept on wearing the Patriot Mobile shirt. Found him, sat down in Dallas. We had a great meeting. And I vetted Patriot Mobile head to toe, their business model, how they do things. And I was convinced that we must partner with them. They're not only America's only Christian conservative cell phone provider, they're one of the few companies fighting back. They offer the same nationwide coverage as the major carrier. So you get the same great service plus the peace of mind, and your money is combating the left's attempt to silence you. Patriot Mobile has plans to fit any budget, and their 100% U.S.-based customer support team provides exceptional customer service. Patriot Mobile shares your values, and they support organizations fighting for religious liberty, constitutional rights, sanctity of life, like Turning Point USA, and veteran and first responder heroes. So here's how it works. If you have a big major carrier, you are funding the bad guys. That money might as well be a check, Democrat National Committee. Or you could have it go to Patriot Mobile, where they give their proceeds back to Turning Point USA, veterans, and amazing groups. It's a no-brainer. So go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. Get free activation with the offer code CHARLIE. Veterans and first responders save even more, so make the switch today. Between the left, the media, and all these rhinos, we need to stick together. Patriot Mobile helps you do that. It's a way to get engaged. It's a way to engage in the corporate warfare that's happening. So do me a favor, check it out. PatriotMobile.com/Charlie. We've switched everything over, and we love Patriot Mobile. Producer Andrew is a massive fan. PatriotMobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. Don't give your money to BLM or the Alphabet Mafia or whatever when you are doing the regular thing. Instead, make the switch, patriotmobile.com/Charlie. With us right now is Jack Posobiec. He's been on our show many times, but now his first time on our Real America's Voice program. Jack, welcome back.
I'm very excited to be here, Charlie. And super congratulations again on getting the contract and getting everything signed off, the deal with Real America's Voice. I think this is going to 10x everything you do, which means you'll be at like 10,000x from where everybody else is.
Well, you're very kind, Jack, and you've played a big part of that. So, Jack, I want to compliment you. You've been on the cutting edge of what's happening in Uvalde. I think this is important for two reasons. Number one, we should always care about the truth, always. But number two, I think that it's important when it comes to our gun control debate right now. Because if we look at Uvalde as the facts actually show us, this has very little to do about, you know, gun purchasing or red flag laws, and a lot more about a police failure to intervene. What are your thoughts?
Well, one of the big things that people need to understand about Uvalde, and it's actually something that even in the initial reporting, so, and this is something where I do have to ask for forgiveness on, because when this all happened, I was over in Davos, Switzerland. I'm going up and down the Alps. We're, getting detained. We went to Ukraine. I come back. And that's when I really was able to start sinking my teeth into the details here. Then yesterday, the Texas Department of Public Safety comes out. That's the head of the Texas police. And they start releasing these documents based on the timeline, based on some of the 911 calls, the dispatcher calls with the local chief. And so now we've been able to dig through those documents, to dig through this hearing. And one thing that I think everybody needs to understand is that this guy, Pete Arredondo, one of the names you need to memorize in this is Pete Arredondo. Originally, the way it was being reported, I think a lot of people had the misunderstanding that he was the chief of police for all of Uvalde. That's not true. He's actually the chief of police for the Uvalde CIDS, the Consolidated Independent, or CISD, school district. So he's the chief of police just for that school. That is his sole duty, his sole responsibility, and it's a six-man force that is directly assigned for the security of that school. They're brought on by the school board, and then that's, of course, working in conjunction with the city council. But this really is a situation where he had one charge, and that was the defense of this school. And so when you're looking into this and you're hearing, and we can go through a little bit of the timeline if you want to.
Yeah, please do.
When you're hearing this, it doesn't appear that they actually had a very strong plan for how to deal with an active shooter. They've gone through some trainings and they've read a few, you know, materials, the PowerPoints that get pushed out by DOJ, et cetera, that most law enforcement agencies around the country go through. But sure, they checked the box, but did they have an actual plan for dealing with school shooters within the geography of their school itself? Because this school district, it does include multiple schools. You've got elementary school, middle school, you've got a high school nearby, you've got multiple buildings, multiple facilities. You need to, if you're assigned to a school like that, you need to be understanding of that day in, day out. So the two biggest things that I think right off the bat that we can immediately identify as lies, essentially, that were told in the early days of this. And these were lies that unfortunately led Greg Abbott, I think the day after this happened, to praise the response of the police. Obviously, that has not aged very well. But then he later came out, I think it's almost immediately, and said that he had been misled. The first thing they told us, Charlie, was remember, they claimed that they engaged the shooter outside the school in the parking lot. Remember, the very first headlines that we were hearing on this said, oh, there was an engagement. Then they shot the officers. The officers fell back. The shooter was able to go inside. That never happened. That never happened whatsoever. That was a smokescreen. I don't know exactly who started that story. Never true. Didn't happen. The person who was engaged, by the way, was a teacher that one of the responding officers mistook for the shooter. The shooter at the time was, in fact, outside the school at that point. But because the responding officer misidentified the shooter or misidentified the teacher as the shooter was hiding behind a car, used that moment to slip inside when they saw the door was open. That's number one. Number two, in terms of a lie that we're seeing on this, we were told again and again that all these stories about you need a special key to be able to open the classroom 111 and 112, and they needed the special key, and they had to wait for the special key, and they had to go dig up this janitor, and Bortak comes in, and they're trying different keys, and they finally find the master key. And we were told that the reason that they needed that was because the doors were locked from the inside. What was revealed yesterday at the hearing from Texas DPS, number one, they actually brought the doors into the Texas legislature there in Austin, and it demonstrated for the legislators, those doors do not lock from the inside. You can't lock them from the inside. The only way they could be locked from the inside is if there was an electronic system that it's sort of an auto lockdown procedure. They weren't locked. We know they weren't locked because the shooter was going in and out. And that's the second part of the lie. From the footage that reporters, it hasn't been released completely yet. Now, we do need to see this. And I think we're really at the point where we need to demand the body cam of Chief Arredondo in this.
That's because he's claiming,
well, from what we see, Charlie, is that he never actually went into the classroom, right? That he stayed in the hallway. So I want to know what happened in that hallway, right? He's claiming that they went up, they tried the doors, they couldn't enter. We haven't found any surveillance footage whatsoever of officers simply trying to open the door, jiggle the handle to see if the room was actually locked or not. Because if this shooter is going in and out, then guess what? That means that that door is not locked. So we've been able to blow two major holes in the story that have been told thus far. And then when you're looking through some of the timeline of this, when you're looking at some of the statements that were being made at the time they were being made, you can see what this should have been an amazing response, right? Because within the first 3 minutes of that shooter entering that classroom, you had officers in the hallway. within 3 minutes, which would have been amazing, right? Which would have been this wonderful story about police officers stopping a school shooter within 3 minutes. And it would have been a great resounding success story for having, having police officers assigned to schools. That doesn't happen. At that point, Arredondo is on the dispatcher at 11:40 saying that we only have pistols. We don't have rifles.
But that's not true, right? I want to pause you
and
here,
Jack. And
you
can see in the photos.
Yeah, I know. We have the photos up on screen. So they look like they have long rifles, long guns with shields. How is this possible? This guy's just making this stuff up. He's a liar.
All right, so this Pete Arredondo, and I see some people saying, well, it's because he didn't have his radio on him. Now, he leaves his radio outside the school, isn't able to communicate from his point in the hallway to the officers that are in other points of the hallway, yet he's the chief of police of school security. And when you look at this guy, and some people have made made light of the fact that he is someone who donated to Biden. He is someone who donated to Beto. Not a lot of money, a couple bucks here and there. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, is he somebody who isn't exactly a conservative, isn't exactly a traditional what we would think of as a police officer, that, you know, it seems that he has a pretty good record up until this. But when you listen to some of the statements and you go back to the original things that he said, then we match it up with the photos that are coming out from the hallway. When we match it up with the dispatcher police call that he was made, he had a phone call. He had to use his cell phone because he didn't have his radio.
But let me make sure I understand this, Jack. There was a 1 hour gap between when the police officers were in the hallway, between when they neutralized the shooter. Is that still correct?
100%.
Okay. So why didn't the police officers then go with their shields, 19 of them, and their long guns into the classroom and go neutralize the shooter? Why didn't they do that?
I think I've been able to pinpoint this. And again, so Arredondo, who was essentially the incident commander on the scene, of course, his lawyers are saying that he never claimed to be the incident commander because he's got a law firm now. Uvalde City has hired a private law firm because they're trying to block the body cam footage coming out in terms of this, right? We know they really don't want that coming out. What it seems happened was he misunderstood the situation. He thought that it was a barricaded shooter with hostages in the situation.
Hold on a second. I just, this is an hour, Jack.
And then is responding based on that.
But for 1 hour, you just stand in the hall with long guns while you hear people screaming and suffering? I mean, what playbook are they following? This is there's no other excuse for this than being a coward, period. End of story.
Charlie, it's completely insane when you look at some of the explanations that he's trying to come up with, the way his lawyers are trying to block the footage from coming out, the way the city has hired this private law firm to block footage from coming out, because you hear the parents. The parents, by the way, and we have the other story that just came out, Postmillennial has it, where an officer who arrived at the scene, off-duty officer, who was a husband of one of the teachers in the room. I don't know if it's 111 or 112, but one of the rooms arrives with his gun, says, I need to go in because my wife just called me. She said she's been shot.
And then they detained
him. Officers outside detain him, disarm him.
So the police were more worried about disarming and detaining parents and spouses. But again, I'm failing to understand this. You have 19 people that just stand and do nothing for an hour. Is that a fair thing to say, Jack, or am I oversimplifying it?
They're throwing up that they were looking for a key, that they didn't know if they could get in. Arredondo at one point, Charlie, and this is damning for him. This is absolutely damning for him. At one point, he calls the dispatcher and says, we only have pistols. We are outgunned. We need
but
SWAT.
We now have pictures that show.
And we know that's false.
And so I'm just trying to comprehend here where there might be some way I could be wrong. Because we went really hard, really quick, as you know, Jack. And if it turns out the facts are only further strengthening our original gut instinct here, right? I have to wonder what is the 19 people that did that, how could they live with themselves by standing there for an hour while kids are getting massacred? Like, this is not the police I grew up with. These are not the police I know. Who are these people?
who's got a teacher in there who was killed, by the way, killed throwing herself in front of the children.
Yes.
Sacrificing herself to try to save people by jumping in front of them, taking the bullet.
But no, but the police were too worried to arrest him, but did nothing about the actual shooter. Is that right?
We're also hearing, by the way, that one of the officers that was in that hallway had a daughter who was killed in that room. And so
why didn't he go in? I don't understand. This is not the country I grew up in, Jack. The country I grew up in is that the two towers have been hit. I don't care what people are. I'm going to go save their lives.
Right.
I don't get what country do we live in now, Jack?
Charlie, we live in a country where we got rid of toxic masculinity. We turned into a country of proceduralists and bureaucrats and middle managers. And we think that, well, we have to follow the protocol and we have to follow the guidance. And we're waiting for someone to come down from on high to tell us what we're supposed to do. And we've become a country that is afraid to act. And we at this point, we had men, 19 men, fully armed.
With shields.
Body armor, ballistic shields. And I hear people saying, well, maybe they weren't the right kind of ballistic shields. And this body armor maybe isn't rated for AR-15. Since Columbine, every police officer is taught, if you have an active shooter situation, you go. You go in, you're there to serve and protect.
Flight 93 were heroes. That was a different generation. I don't know what is going on right now. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Right now, court packing is the real danger to our country. Make no mistake, court packing is a coup. The radical left is working overtime on new plans to pack the Supreme Court. Look, if we do not stop them from installing four more justices so they can rig the system in their favor, it'll be catastrophic for our court, our country, and the American way of life. We cannot let this happen. I will not let it happen on our watch. That's why I need you to join us. We're gathering a coalition of 1 million patriots to say no to court packing, no to the left-wing agenda, and no to the Supreme Court coup. Franklin Graham, former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese, Dr. James Dobson, the Family Policy Alliance, and more, and over 400,000 people like you are all on board. Please sign your name now. Go to SupremeCoup, that's COUP.com, to sign First Liberty's letter. First Liberty is a great organization run by a dear friend, Kelly Shackelford. Go to SupremeCoup.com, and God bless America. I just want to reiterate, I love the police, I'm pro-police, but anything you love should not be immune from criticism or feedback if they act in a certain way. And I want to know the societal and cultural and environmental factors that play in to what we saw in Uvalde. And the failure to be able to tell that story, by the way, plays directly into the Democrats' gun-grabbing agenda. If we all of a sudden say, oh, I don't care about Uvalde, how dare you say that? But we do get emails at people that say, Charlie, you know, time to move on from Uvalde, enough. Which I think is ridiculous, 21 people died. The tragedy is being so politicized that the truth of what happened there on that awful day is that you had 19 people with guns and riot shields that were struck by paralysis of either afraid of being sued or fired or terminated or killed in action. So, Jack, I mean, we can go through some of the details here. Let me play one of the tapes here, kind of what you were talking about here. One of them, I think it was Greg Abbott. Actually, let's play this one here. Let's go to Cut 50, Texas House member, on what happened. Play Cut 50.
1 hour, 14 minutes and 8 seconds. That's how long the children waited and the teachers waited in rooms 111 to be rescued. And while they waited, the on-scene commander waited for a radio and rifles. Then he waited for shields. Then he waited for SWAT. Lastly, he waited for a key that was never needed.
14 minutes. So they could have went in guns a-blazing and someone might have died. That's true. People might have got shot. That is true. But with 19 people, they would have overwhelmed the shooter and potentially children's lives would have been saved. Is that correct, Jack?
100%, Charlie. And not only that, but for some of the children who, and it's gory to talk about this, but we do have to bring it up. the fact that some of the children might still have been alive.
That's right.
At that point,
they were bleeding out.
They had been able to receive medical attention faster had they not waited this long hour. That if medical attention, first responders could have been could have arrived there on the scene. Those first critical moments are so fast. You're airing your airway, your breathing, your circulation, all of those things that need to be immediately. If you've got a sucking chest wound, et cetera, I know from a little bit of training in the military on some of these things that in the first few moments, that's really when it matters so much. But Charlie, you know, getting back to your question that you mentioned before the break, I think it's important for conservatives to look at this and understand that there is a sort of tension, right, between the sort of back the blue bumper stickers and flags and T-shirts that we see. And you say, well, back the blue, and conservatives back the blue. And then you see a situation like this. And so, you know, what do? You throw out your back the blue T-shirt? You know, do you get rid of it? And the answer that I would say to this is, I think when it comes to a situation where you say you back the blue, I mean, that doesn't mean that you necessarily support bad cops. You don't support decisions that lead to failure. You call that out. But the answer isn't to defund the police or get rid of police. It's no, you have to actually re-strengthen these institutions in society, because as conservatives, we want proper law enforcement. We want a proper system of justice, not a two-tier system of justice. And we do want armed officials going forth and preventing crimes from happening in the country. That's kind of the whole point of government, right? Collective defense, you know, defense from crime, defense from aggression, defense from violence. That's sort of the whole point. Part and parcel with that, of course, is the right to self-defense, because as every gun owner knows, when seconds count, the police are minutes away. And so that's where you have this tension. And so I see a lot of conservatives wanting to jump on the defund the police bandwagon. They say, you know what, maybe BLM's got some points about this, but look, defund the police is what leads you to a problem or leads you to a place where you have poor police officers, because you're not making a lot of money.
Yeah, and I mean,
you're not competitive and you're demonized. You go out there thinking you're following policy, and suddenly you're looking at a life sentence for doing your job.
Yeah, and never, Jack, are we generalizing the all police. We're talking about people that happen to be police officers, 19 of them. And I just want an explanation. So if anyone can come on the show and tell me why they waited an hour while they had the best equipment and shields that I think were at their disposal, just come and tell me what the explanation is. I don't have to overthink it. You don't have to overthink it. If there isn't an explanation, then stop digging in and admit it and be like, this was terrible. This is awful. I love the police. You love the police. They're necessary for a functioning in civil society. But there is something here that might be a deeper cultural rot beyond just kind of looking at things as like, oh, Charlie, you're advancing the BLM agenda. Really? I mean, that's such a sloppy argument. I want to know what country I'm living in when 19 people with guns and shields sit, you know, 50 feet away from a door that could have been opened while a maniac goes and murders children one by one and they bleed out and they wait an hour. That's what the facts show us.
In Texas, mind you, in Texas. Right. I we've lost something in this country. I think it's something that can be regained, and I think it's the rebuilding of society, and conservatives need to look at this as a rebuilding and a re-strengthening of society and social institutions. That if the new right exists, this needs to be the mantle of the new right.
Don't defend the indefensible. That's my advice to people. Just look at how they are. Just say, wow, that was bad. Okay, let's fix it. What's going on in our culture? What's going on in our country? What's going on with potential lawsuits? What's going on to recruiting, you know, not the best people to become police officers? Whatever. Just be honest. Don't defend the indefensible. You lose credibility. Our movement loses credibility. And honestly, it's just not true. So don't say things that aren't true. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts. As always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.